Well, it was fun exploring Wisconsin trout streams with Steve Bourne, wasn't it? But now we're going to take a voyage out into the ocean. My next guest profiles about a dozen sea animals that are facing threat of extinction in a new illustrated book. It's called Wild Ocean, Sharks, Whales, Rays, and Other Endangered Sea Creatures. Matt Dembecki is a cartoonist and editor of the book, and he joins us today to tell us all about it. And Matt, welcome to the show.
Oh, good afternoon, Larry. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh man, I'm really enjoying your book. It's such a different approach than I am used to, because of the illustrations, the wonderful illustrations, and the little stories you tell within those illustrations about the various sea creatures that you feature.
No, thanks. I appreciate that. And you know, that's one thing I tell folks, that it's we use the comic book format because I think that a lot of people can relate to it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I certainly related to it, but at the same time, I have a 10-year-old at home whose favorite animal, by the way, is the manatee.
Uh-huh.
That's her. I mean, she has she's got a mole who's about an 8-inch long stuffed little stuffed toy manatee that has slept with pretty much her whole life, and has spent a lot of time studying and reading about manatees. So this book is going to be a real treat for her when I get it home.
Oh, that's great. You know, it's probably the best critic of those books are the kids who really, kind of understand what these animals are and probably know a lot more about these animals than we do.
What captivates you about the ocean?
I've always had an interest in the ocean. I grew up in New England and pretty close to the coast, and I just remember going to the beach and just looking out and seeing how just vast it was and how I can only see what's on top. There's another whole world below it, and that was always kind of fascinating. You know, I kind of grew up in an era where people were kind of thinking out towards space, to exploring space and finding out new forms of life and things out there, where here on this planet, there's so much more still to explore and learn.
Yeah. And as we look at the health of the ocean and its wildlife, what are some of the major threats that you feature?
Well, there's pollution, and there's also overfishing. And it's not always direct, like pollution. When I talk about pollution, it's not necessarily just dumping garbage and waste into the ocean. Sometimes it's runoff waste, using fertilizer on land, and that kind of runs off into to rivers, and that the rivers run into the oceans, and it has this ecological effect on the animals.
Great to have you with us today, Matt. And I want to give our listeners a chance to chime in as well. Matt Dembecki, our guest today, cartoonist and editor of Wild Ocean, Sharks, Whales, Rays, and Other Endangered Sea Creatures. What questions do you have about endangered sea life? Do you have any thoughts to add about any of the creatures that we'll be talking or we are talking about today? I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions and your comments there. And certainly, we would love to hear from you. Your book is actually a graphic novel, I guess we could say. Why did you choose that format for getting your message out?
Well, I'm a cartoonist, so I just love to draw and doodle, and there's a couple reasons. From an artistic point of view, I just love marrying text with cartoons and telling a story that way. Also with some of my previous books, I've had great success in reaching out to reluctant readers or troubled readers or English as a second language students that just need a little encouragement, that might be intimidated by reading prose books initially. And so this is kind of a way to kind of introduce them to reading and also letting them learn about a topic that's important. You know, I can speak from experience. I grew up, as I mentioned, New England. My parents are Polish immigrants, and I didn't speak English till I was about 6 or 7 years old. And so one day my mom read in a newspaper how some schools were using comics to introduce and get kids comfortable with reading. And so, you know, I can speak from experience about how that kind of not only introduced me to reading, but also introduced me to comics as an art form and art in general. That from there I was able to springboard and appreciate other forms of art as well.
That's a really cool story. And so as an art, that's been something probably almost your whole life then, isn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. You know, I had this interest in comics and art all through high school. And then when I got to college, I just had like a change. I didn't really want to draw that much anymore. And I took like a hiatus for about 15 years. And it wasn't until I met my wife on our first date that I got back into it. She had a copy of a book, a graphic novel she was reading at the time. As I flipped through it, all those things kind of popped in my head, how much I really enjoyed doing this, you know, and how fun it was, and, you know, how it's a very unique form of artwork.
Well, it definitely is, and the stories that you tell along with these species that are endangered. And by the way, how did you decide on the animals you covered?
Well, this is an anthology, so I'm working with about 20 different creators on this book, and what happened was I worked with this group called Pangea Seed, which is an ocean conservation organization, and they do outreach mainly to youth through artwork. And so I was talking to the executive director, and they currently have a campaign focused on 12 endangered sea animals. And so we decided that, you know, a unique way to maybe reach an audience would be to write stories about these 12 endangered sea animals. So I contacted some writers and illustrators in the comics field that I knew that either had a very strong interest in nature or marine biology in general, and asked them if they would be interested in contributing a story. So that's how I kind of left off that. For example, the first story, Tortuga, the island that swims, is written and drawn by Jay Hostler, who is a biology professor at a university in Pennsylvania. And he actually does comics on the side he did one called Clan Apis, which is about ants. And so he was able to tell the story about ants and the evolution of ants through a comics format. So I thought it was kind of a natural fit for that, for this book as well.
Yeah, and it's so he kind of tells that story, as I remember it, is from sort of like the viewpoint of the turtle.
That's right.
Itself, and it's a nice, and it's a nice and interesting story.
Yeah, you know, I think one thing we tried to do was not necessarily be so linear about the way we told the stories. Necessarily, we don't want to be kind of speaking about this is an endangered animal, this is how long it lives, this is the size it is. We want to actually pull those animals into a story. And so, you know, for example, one story that I really enjoyed, particularly in the book, is called The Shape of the Future, written by Michael Cogill. Mm-hmm. And what I enjoyed about that was that he explored how we look at animals, how scientists look at animals to help us come up with new inventions, for example, submarines and things like that. So these scientists at the University of Virginia and other institutions are studying animals, in particular the manta rays,
yeah,
and how it moves and flies, essentially flying through the ocean, and whether we can adapt that motion into technology.
And actually, I think, as I remember, they actually developed a couple of, worked with some engineers and so forth, and have something. It's not a manta ray, but it looks sort of like a manta ray, and
yeah,
it actually functions.
That's right. And they've been kind of testing these out, and the great thing about it is they have these competitions to at universities to see how far or how students and professors can develop the technology. So I think that's a lot of fun. And even though you know might not use the complete technology or the physiological aspects of the manta ray, perhaps it's just one aspect of it, maybe like the flow of the wing or something like that.
Yeah. Talking with Matt Dembicki about his book, Wild Ocean, Sharks, Whales, Rays, and Other Endangered Sea Creatures. Inviting your questions and comments as we move along today. The book highlights 12 endangered sea animals and talks about them and in cartoon form, in cartoon format. And it's interesting. Certainly captured my attention, and I'm an older guy, and I know my daughter, who's 10, is going to love this book as well. Give us a call with your questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And you mentioned that the first chapter, was about the hawksbill turtle. And it's been hit particularly hard, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we didn't select the animals. Pangaea Sea did. But they do a very good job in focusing what animals are particularly endangered. And there's some animals on there that we don't necessarily, when we think of endangered animals, they might not come to, your mind immediately. For example, the giant clam. We don't think about the giant clam necessarily as an animal or as something mm-hmm. that, is affected necessarily by the environment. We think these giant clams is kind of sitting at the bottom of the ocean, just not even moving.
And I'm going to break in for a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with our guest, Matt Dembicki, in just a minute. Stay with us. Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, talking today with Matt Dembicki. And Matt, am I pronouncing your name right?
It's pronounced Dembicki.
Dembicki.
It throws people off. It's a soft C, kind of like rice or something like that.
Dembicki. Okay. All right. I'm sorry.
It makes more sense when I made the Polish connection before, right?
Got it. Okay. At any rate, I have to apologize for getting Matt's mispronouncing his last name. He's a cartoonist and editor of a new illustrated book. It's called Wild Oceans, Sharks, Whales, Rays, and Other Endangered Sea Creatures. I'm certainly inviting you, if you have questions about endangered sea life or thoughts to share about them, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you have a question or comment about the format that they've chosen, which is a cartoon format to this book. Believe me, it's wonderfully done. If you're near an email, you can send us a message at talk@wpr.org. Or you can leave a comment on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and I have a link to his book on my Facebook page. So just go to the Larry Mueller Show; you can get an idea of what the book is like from going to my page. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Some callers online. Let's take some calls. Stuart in Manitowoc, you're first, then Roberta. But Stuart, hi.
Hi, Larry. How you doing today?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm curious as to what Matt's view is of SeaWorld with their captivity of animals and their research on marine life.
I don't know too much about SeaWorld policy per se. I did see the movie Blackfish. Mm-hmm. So the documentary about how they treated orcas there. So that in itself is very, very troubling. I definitely don't condone having large animals like that in captivity. Some animals just cannot exist in those kind of enclosed environments. So that's really all I can say about that.
Okay. Thanks, Stuart. Roberta in Lake Geneva, let's turn to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Great. I listen to the cartoonist with the ears of a grandmother whose children's problems never leave my mind, really. I have a special education grandson who's 14 who has never been able to really grasp all the therapy he's gotten to learn how to read properly. And he still reads at about a first grade level. And hearing about your author's story, I immediately called my daughter-in-law and told it to her. And she's going to run out and get some comic books on subjects that he dearly loves, like race cars and Spider-Man. And maybe this will help him learn how to read.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. Matt, a comment?
Oh, that's beautiful. You know, that's like I said, it worked for me, and I do think I have another book called Shock: The Journey of a Great White, and it tracks the journey of a great white shark from the coast of California to the coast of Hawaii. And I did a lot of research on it. I talked to my marine biologists. I looked at their studies on great white sharks. I watched and listened to documentaries about great white sharks. I really got into it, and probably one of the best comments I had about that book was from a teacher in Miami who had some reluctant readers in her class, and there wasn't anything they did, any type of book that she introduced them to. They just weren't able to kind of dive into it. And she introduced this book to them, and they completely got into it. And it served, like I said, served as a springboard. It got them comfortable. At a comfortable reading level, they weren't completely overwhelmed, and like I said, it helped them, encourage them to read other types of books as well. So, if it helps your listener's grandson, that's fantastic. You know, there are other tools available like this, and there's the great thing about comics now is they're not always all about superheroes. I think a lot of the attention because of the movies. Spider-Man, Superman, X-Men, things like that. They get a lot of attention. But the comics have really kind of expanded in the types of content they cover. They have stories that are autobiographical, biographical, historical, cultural. They're comics geared for very young readers, and they're also comic books geared toward adults that deal with adult content, like surviving cancer and things like that. So I think it's just another medium for telling our stories.
Well, I'm delighted that I happen to be driving and having my favorite radio station on at the same time.
Roberta, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. I love your story, and I hope others take a cue from you as well. And you can join in, too. Maybe you have a question or comment. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And I forgot to mention this earlier, so let me do it now before I forget. I'll be near some water tomorrow, as a matter of fact. I hope you'll join me for a special meet and greet with Wisconsin Public Radio's Garden Talk. Get together. It's tomorrow night at 6 p.m. at the Washburn Cultural Center in Washburn, Wisconsin. We're going to raise a toast to spring's arrival as you enjoy food from Coco's, a refreshing beverage, and a chance to win some prizes, including tickets to Big Top Chautauqua. We have some Wisconsin Public Radio gear. We've got books and a whole lot more. And celebrate gardening season with me. It's a little affordable fundraiser, just $15 a person. It's going to support the Wisconsin Public Radio programs you love. So for more information, you can just call 1-800-747-7444 or go online. So 1-800-747-7444 or go online to WPR.org/events. That's WPR.org/events for that get-together, which is tomorrow night, as a matter of fact. So looking forward to that. Now, if you have a question for our guest today, Matt Dambisky, I hope you will call in at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And let's turn to Jerry in Appleton next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, yeah, I got a kick out of listening to this. I was in high school in the 50s, so you can guess my age. But we read the comic books all the time, and they had the classics. And I know that a lot of us just got more interested in reading books than that because that's how we started in the comic books, and especially when we found out about the classics.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of those types of stories, you know, I believe in cycles, so I think that the classics are kind of returning, and you have a new audience, new creators, younger creators are rediscovering that content and redrawing them into more current, you know, contemporary styles. So it's those are some wonderful works that are appearing now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always let my kids read the comics because I knew, you know, when we were in school that it helped. They could stay up a half hour later if they wanted to read the comics. And then they switched as they got older to books.
Oh, yeah.
To The Hobbit and them, you know. So, yeah, it's a great idea.
Thank you. Thanks very much for calling. We'll turn to Paul in Whitewater next. Hi, Paul. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm concerned about ocean acidification and the effect on crustaceans. I read a very depressing article about how pteropods, which are at the bottom of the food chain, largely in Antarctica, are losing their shells during that ocean acidification. And I was wondering if your guest actually is going to address that within the context of his book. He may not address it, but others might.
Mm-hmm.
We do. We actually we do have a story in there that talks about corals. About coral and the acidification of the ocean and how it's, if not directly, very indirectly related to killing of the coral and how that affects the life, other sea life that depends on the coral for food and for shelter. So we do try to introduce that concept about that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. I appreciate it. Appreciate your call very much. The stories within the book, some of them are almost ethereal. I really got a kick out of I'm trying to butt handing.
Yes, yeah.
That is a cool story that you have.
Yeah, yeah, and you know the one thing.
Maybe describe it a little bit for our listeners and.
Well, it's this kind of a Filipino legend about essentially whale sharks, and you know, and it's this kind of mythical story and deals with a fisherman who's out in the ocean and his kind of crossover with this myth about the whale shark, and you know, the one thing that you can't see is the visual aspect of it, you know, like I said before, you know, marrying comics. And marrying the art form in the word is something that's to see it. It's kind of very visually appealing, and I think he does Pierce, the writer and illustrator of that story, does a wonderful job. And we have a wide variety of stories and illustrators as well. So you might have someone who does a more cartoony style, someone that does a more realistic style. We have artists that do, computer coloring, and then we have folks like Pierce that do this beautiful watercolor production. And so, you know, I think there's something there for everybody, whatever appeals to you.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And some interesting stories in here for me, you know, just for example, the story of the bluefin tuna. Maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, written by Josh Frankel. And, that was he kind of had like almost if you think of the comic page as a split screen, right, of the page.
Mm-hmm.
So you had up at top talking about why people, just quick facts, you know, why people are buying this, you know, how much it costs, and then below kind of the implications of that. So it's kind of like if you're watching a split-screen movie, there's one thing happening to the left, and then the kind of like the counterpoint or the result of those actions kind of on the right, or in this case, above and below. It's a very simple story, but I think it's very powerful. It's very kind of factual. Here are the facts, and with an illustration next to it. So, like, each of the storytellers has a different approach. Not all the stories are like that. We have other stories, for example, about storyteller Pat Lewis did a story about the manatee, the lady of the sea, and that's kind of more kind of funny, mm-hmm. you know, very kind of cartoony. But again, it talks a little bit about the myth of it, how some of the early sailors and who came to from the European countries to America mistook manatees for mermaids.
Mermaids.
Yeah, and so I don't know how you necessarily would mistake a manatee for a mermaid, but you know that's part of the myth, the legend of it. And so Pat kind of took off with it and had some fun with it. Each of these stories, you know, because we are storytellers, and so each of the, you want to engage the reader, keep their attention, and yet still kind of be able to kind of convey some educational aspect to it. Mm-hmm. So that's what we try to do with these stories.
Yeah, it's funny. There is one spot in that story where he says, "I don't know how you could mistake a 1,300-pound slab of bristly, wrinkled flesh for a comely mermaid lass." That is a good question, as a matter of fact.
Well, they probably saw him, you know, you're suffering from scurvy. It's a hot day. You look out in the distance, and you just see this tail, and, you know, it's a mermaid.
There you go. Well, and just back to the bluefin tuna, because I didn't want to go away from that. Just the story of that, and I learned quite a bit in this in these few panels here. 50 years ago, bluefin tuna were not desirable fish at all.
Yeah. And it just kind of shows you how, you know, just the times have changed and how, you know, pop culture and culture in general just can change on the dime and have a drastic effect on things.
It went from a fish that nobody wanted to a fish that can cost... What? I've forgotten even the price.
Thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Really unbelievable. We had an email from Jen in Oshkosh, and she wonders if you could talk about your journey becoming an illustrator, how you got into it, what kind of education you went through, and then sort of how you broke in.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned before, is really my mom who kind of brought comics to my attention, and all through high school I was reading mostly superhero comics. I did have an interest in some of the horror comics. Your reader mentioned that she grew up in the 50s, and some of the old horror comics from the 50s, I had an interest in those as well, collecting those. But when I got in college, I lost interest, and it wasn't until... And so for 15 years, I didn't look or read comics or anything. So like 15 years later, I met my wife on our first date. She bought a copy of this popular book at the time, Sandman, written by Neil Gaiman, who's a popular author now. And as I was thumbing through it, I remember how much I really enjoyed it. It was almost kind of like a nostalgic visit through my childhood. But I also enjoyed the reading them, the medium itself. I enjoyed illustrating, so I kind of got back into it. I didn't have any formal cartooning training. I was always doodling and on anything, paper, books, sometimes school books, and I would get in trouble for, you know, the public school books that you borrow from the school, and I would just draw strange things in there. And I started by just doing mini comics. And mini comics are essentially just 8.5 by 11 piece of paper that you'd fold, and, you know, write little stories, and I would go to, like, a copy store like Kinko's or something like that and make some photocopies, 25, 50 copies, and I would trade them with friends. And they also have a lot of places have, like, these zine fests, and they also have small press and independent comic shows. And I would go to those and start selling those, and pretty soon, kind of, you know, you start to get a little following, and you make more advanced, complicated books. And pretty soon, I was able to pitch books and book ideas to publishers like Fulcrum. You know, my first book with Fulcrum was an anthology called Trickster, Native American Tales. And those are Native American stories, all written by Native American storytellers specifically for the book about the trickster animals of their particular tribes. And I got to match them up with artists, and they collaborated to produce the book. And so that really got me excited about comics anthologies and just how you can explore different things through comics. So, again, what I mentioned before about culture and exploring culture and conveying different cultures through comics, you know, that's what I was able to do with Trickster.
Yeah, that's really interesting. We had an email from Kristen who says, I understand more teachers are using graphic novels in the classroom. Have you found this is true as well, and could your book be used in the classroom?
Absolutely. That's a great aspect of it, and I have to give kudos to public librarians who are always kind of on the cutting edge of what books are coming out and how people are using books. And they've really, in general, really improved and upped their graphic novel collections. And as a result, publishers as well, you know, realize that this is a great a medium to reach out to students that, you know, especially particularly in our age, your listener before who mentioned that she read comics in the 50s. You know, I was talking with a colleague that was interesting. The 40s and 50s, you just had magazines and comics and books. In the 40s, all of a sudden, 30s and 40s, you had the radio. So you had the radio come in. In the 50s, you had television come in. And then, you know, currently you have computers came in the 80s and 90s, and now you have mobile devices. So they're all competing for your attention. So whereas before, you know, if a kid wanted to do something, you know, didn't want to read a book, they could grab a comic book. But now they can play a video game on their iPhone. They can watch a movie anytime they want, right? But I remember when, for example, in the 70s, when The Wizard of Oz was on TV, and it was a big deal.
Yeah.
You watch it then or you missed it, you know?
Yeah.
It was on in April or May, and that was it. Now you can watch it anytime you want. You could be on a subway system, and you can start watching it at your desire. And so there's this kind of great competition for attention, and I think publishers are realizing that these could be used as educational tools. Specifically regarding Wild Ocean, we do have in the back how these stories relate to various aspects, and we did try to tie it with very curriculum aspects that teachers might use in their classroom.
Yeah, it's I would think it'd be just a wonderful book for using in the classroom for natural science parts of study in the classroom, and probably pretty much. Oh, I don't know. Did you have it geared to a particular age, or was it? I mean, in terms of, I think my 10-year-old's going to be fine with it, but.
Yeah, you know, I think it's marketed as 12 to 18, but I have a 9-year-old son who loves the book, and he's always asking me questions like, why'd you come up with this, or why is this one here, or what happens with this animal? So, you know, and it's great, and, you know, that to me is kind of a sign of success if you've given them an opportunity to think this through and for them to ask the questions.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's been a real pleasure, Matt. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Larry, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it as well.
Matt Dembriski is the author of Wild Ocean. Go to my Facebook page. You'll get a link there to his book. It's a really fascinating book, and obviously, as done in comic book style, it makes it all the more interesting to me. I really appreciate his time. And thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.